As you heard, this is a Sefer Lehillah Nishmas. What's the Hebrew name?
Yehuda
Aryeh ben Yeshua Yaakov?
Yakir.
Yakir, ben Yeshua Yakir. May the Divrei Torah that we're saying here today be M'ilui Nishmasai. We hope that everybody will be able to take out from what we have to say Chizuk to whatever situation they find themselves in life. I know that this program has been set up. The little that I heard about it is to discuss issues of parenting, raising children in turbulent times. Surely not an easy task for anybody here. And the truth is that today is Hanukkah, and Hanukkah we should really be discussing in Yonim issues that have to do with Hanukkah. But in a sense, it just so happens to be that the word Hanukkah really comes from the word Chinuch. Everybody knows that Hanukkah is a remez, Chanukah Hafei, after the war. They rested on the 25th day of Kislev, but that's not the true shot. That's like a remez. Once we have the word Hanukkah, we already found another remez to it by saying Chanukah Hafei. The real origin of the word, the true translation of the word Hanukkah, comes from the word Chanukah Samizbeach, Chanukah Sabais. The Greeks, when they came and they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, or at least they defiled the Beis HaMikdash, it needed to be re-inaugurated and rededicated. Once the Chashmonaim came in there and cleaned it up and purified it, it required a new chinuch, a new inauguration, and a preparation. The word chinuch really means to prepare one for the task that's ahead. You mechanach it, you inaugurate it. And that's really what we do with our children. We mechanach them, we inaugurate them into mitzvahs and into Torah and into proper midas and whatever else it is that makes a person to the proper person. So yes, Hanukkah is really the time to talk about the inyanim of chinuch. It makes no difference if you mechanach the mishkan, you mechanach the mizbeach, or you mechanach yiddish kinderlich, Jewish children. This is all part of the real theme of what the yontov of Hanukkah is all about. The truth is that we're speaking over here to women, to mothers, present mothers, potential mothers, everyone who is going to be involved most directly with the chinuch of their children. And that also is not by chance that we're discussing this on Hanukkah. I mentioned that we find in Hanukkah a unique minig that we don't really find in the other Yom Tovim. There's a minig that's brought out on Shulchan Aruch, that women during this man of the Hadlakas Neiris, while the candles are lit, so they refrain from doing work, they don't do any type of a melacha. What type of a melacha is included into that is dependent upon your minig. Most minhagim follow that whatever you are not supposed to do in Chol HaMoed, you also don't do it this time as well. That doesn't mean that you can't put the kids to bed, you know how to, that's not considered work. But things which are considered work for Chol HaMoed, so that's something that you don't do as well during the time of Hadlakas Neiris. And if you think about it, it's a unique thing that has to do with Hanukkah, because other Yom Tovim, we don't really find that the women, there's a minhag that applies solely to women. They're involved in the work, and they peel the potatoes, and they do a lot of very important things, but there is no halacha, no minhag that is involved in that women are highlighted in any special way. As a matter of fact, usually the women's role, especially when it comes to Yom Tovim, is minimized somewhat. Because we have the general rule of mitzvah sasei hazman krom. If it's a mitzvah that is defined by time, so then women are generally exempt from it. And even if they fulfill it, but they fulfill it maybe in a lesser way than the men do. That's the way the halacha usually turns out. That I'm involved in lulav, that I'm mechuyev in sukkah, that I even technically mechuyev in tkiyas sefer and Rosh Hashanah. Right? These are all mitzvahs which generally in the Yom Tovim, generally women are not involved. Here we find a mitzvah which women have an additional minhag that the men do not. Men could work then, and women should not be engaged in any labor at the time. Why is that so? So the place can tell us already. Women were involved in the nes. The nes came through women. But that's, you know, that's a little bit missing. The nes came through men too. Chashmonai, Ubanov, if not for their war, if not for their fight, we wouldn't have had the victory over the Yevanim. So why is it over here? What's the symbolism that women are this special nekuda, highlighted their role when it comes to the Yontov of Hanukkah? So I was thinking that the pshat is, maybe, possibly as a suggestion, that the Hanukkah is also the only yontiv in all of the yomim tovim that we have in the Jewish calendar that is directly connected to the Jewish home per se, to the house. All the other yomim tovim, the celebration has nothing to do, not halachically or not even technically, have to do with the house itself. You could do a sukkah, you do outside, a shirim kippah, you could do in shul, Purim, you do in the street. You know, it has nothing to do with the Jewish home per se. The only one of the Yom Tovim that is connected to the house, to the home, is Hanukkah. In the Gemara, it's called Neir Ish Ubeisai. That's the name of the mitzvah. The bais is the mechayev. Technically speaking, if a person has no bais, if you don't have a home, you're potter from the mitzvah. A number of years ago, Rabbi Yashav Paskin to the Tzahal soldiers in the Gaza Strip, they're sleeping trenches. He told me you're potter from Neir Hanukkah because you don't have a house. If you don't own a home, so then you don't have the mitzvah of Neir Hanukkah. It is technically connected to the house, to the home itself. And therefore, it could be that in order to highlight this nekuda, this is the only yontif where women, which are really the home. What is the home? What is the home? Is it the physical four walls? The women which stay at home and watch the children at home and dedicate their lives to raising the children, which means to raising their home, this is their yontif. This is the Neir Ish Ubeisai. So we highlight the one yontif where the bias is the critical component. There's a special highlight to the role of the women in connection with that home-based mitzvah. This is the mitzvah that women are so actively involved in, and to highlight that, we give them a special minig that the men are not involved in, because the men are not involved in the creation and the guarding and in the watching and in the making of what the proper home is. So this is really a very clear Hanukkah topic and a very clear Hanukkah topic relating to the women's role in the home through Hanukkah and through the chinuch of the children. Most of the people here, I would imagine, are still quite young, and therefore the children are also quite young. And when children are young, we don't tend to see issues and problems with their development. There's always issues, you know, of the terrible twos and whatever happens. But those are not really, those are common issues. Those are things that happen to everybody. They're not what you call serious parenting struggles. But nevertheless, it is important to know that issues are issues. And yes, when the children are small, then the issues are small. But if the issues are not addressed at a younger age, so they develop into becoming stronger and greater, and small children are small problems, big children are bigger problems, and for sure, even if it's not evident, and even if it doesn't seem to be, you don't really struggle with these issues at this point, but the time to address them and the time to be aware of the potential issues that can arise, and they always do, is... yes, when the children are young, when they're still really, you don't really see a major issue, you don't really see a big problem. But if you nip it at the bud, and if you deal with it at a younger age, then it's much easier to deal with it later on. About a person cannot just say, I hope everything will turn out okay. Hope is not a strategy. You have to do whatever it is that you can. And then you have to daven, and you have to be kaveh, is an Hashem. Hoping is the Rebbeinu Shalom, it's going to require all kinds of tefillos and bakashas for parenting to be successful. But a parent is required to come up with a strategy. That's why I hope, mitzvah Hashem, everything will be okay. That's a very frum way to talk. But it's not the appropriate thing to do when it comes to parenting. What is required to put in the most possible effort to learn the best way to do so, and then, after you put in all the effort, and all the shtabels, and all the tefillos, then kaveh al Hashem, then you hope to do Rabbeinu Shalom, then whatever you did is good. But just to say, okay, so I've had a child, hopefully it'll grow up good. Hope is not really a strategy. And it's also important to remember that just like in everything else in life, there are people which are more successful in things than others. Some people are wealthier, some people are nicer, and some people have all kinds of success, and some people don't. It's this is the nature of the world. One has to be, you have to remember that parenting success is not always connected to parenting inputs. In other words, it's not always the work, does not, if you go out to the business world, so generally when you work very hard, you'll be able to produce a good income. It's not guaranteed. We know that you could work very hard and not produce any income. And the same thing is true in parenting. You could work very hard and you could be a great parent and you could really do everything correctly and gone to all the parenting classes and really studied and really put in the time. And nevertheless, success sometimes is not reachable. It's not necessarily a successful story. And, you know, we can explain it. It's not the Yadenu, and we can lament about it, and we can cry about it. Some things, no matter how much you try, they're just not given. We are not mitzvah. Our command from the Rabbanu Shalom is not to be successful. Our command is to try. We have to do what we have to do. Success is not given in our hands. It's not our role. Yaakov Avinu was given the name Yisroel, Kisarisa im Anoshim ve'elekim, because you fought with Anoshim and Elekim, with Laban and Esav, Vatuchal, and you were successful. But his name is not Michael or Tichael. He's not called after the success. He's named after the Sarisa, because you took up the challenge and you fought. Whether it happens to be that his fighting was successful. So Vatuchal, it's true, he was successful in what he did. But that's not what defines the Jew. That's not what defines Yaakov Avinu. It's not his success that we sort of name, but it's the fact that Kisarisa, that you took the challenge and you fought through it. And this is what we worship. We worship those that do what they need to do in order to be able to succeed. Whether or not they're ultimately successful in what they did, all kinds of chesbonos. And a person cannot say, because I didn't do this, that happened. It's not so. It's not so. That's thinking that you're the master. That's simply saying, I am in control, and if I would have done this, this would have happened. Women do that all the time. If only I would have done that, there is no if only. There isn't. You have to try the best you can. But how the results come out is totally, completely not in our hands. It doesn't make us feel much better. But the fact is, maybe the three greatest leaders the Klal Yisrael had, we're not talking about the others because we can't relate to the others, but let's say post-Matan Torah, the greatest leaders that Klal Yisrael had, Moshe, Shmuel, Hanavi, David HaMelech, to name but a few, but maybe the three top, if you're going to rate them, all three did not see nachas from their children. All three, the facts are, as recorded by us in the Torah and Chazal, what do we have from Gershom and Eliezer, Moshe Rabbeinu's children? Because I'll say they weren't worthy of Yashin in his position. They didn't get Moshe Rabbeinu's position, even though they should have, because of their birthrights. Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson was a kohen for Pesel Micha. He was a priest for Avodah Zarah. Shmuel's children, it's Mefurish in the Nach, that his children did not follow in his path. And that resulted in a big downfall in Klal Yisrael. Because of that, they asked to change the system. They wanted to get a melech. David HaMelech is Mefurish, all of his children, except Shlomo HaMelech, he failed with all of them. It's clear. They either all were killed or died or went off the right path or made a revolution against their own father. There were all kinds of problems. There are definitely, he did not have nachas from his children. Now, we have no understanding of this. We do have some chazals that teach us a little bit about this. But that doesn't in any way lessen Moshe, Shmuel, and David in our eyes. It doesn't make him any lesser of the greatest leaders that Klal Yisrael could have possibly had. There's not shayach to become greater than Moshe and Shmuel. So parenting skills and parenting success are not necessarily definitive of the person. They are all totally with all kinds of different cheshbainis in the Rabbanu Shalom that we are not in control of. It's extremely important for people to understand that. Now, nowadays, it's become very popular, and as we said, this has really become incumbent upon people to become knowledgeable about parenting. And there are forums such as this one, where people are looking to hear maybe a little bit some guidance about issues of parenting, and it's what we call parenting courses, parenting classes. And it's definitely something which is in. It's interesting, though, that as far as I know, this is a pretty new kind of happenings. I don't think my parents ever went to parenting classes. If I would have told them to go to parenting classes, they would have laughed us out of existence. Oh, parenting classes. You're a parent. You know what to do. I mean, what does it mean that you should go to parenting classes? It's not something which was heard of 20, 30, 40 years ago, I don't think, and surely in Poland and in Hungary and before the war in the old country, our grandparents never heard of parenting classes. So why is it that we need parenting classes? What's changed that all of a sudden this has become something which is almost a requirement? And those that don't do it really are maybe neglecting their duties. Are we better because we have parenting classes? You think we are better parents than what our parents were? Perhaps. I don't know. I didn't take a study of this thing. But the fact of the matter is that there's such a thing never existed, and all of a sudden today, it's almost a must-need. And there are probably a number of ways how we could explain it, and everybody will have a different theory. I just think that the key component, it's not that, you know, they were more learned than us. Probably they were less learned than us. They probably didn't even know how to read. The mothers didn't even know how to read Hebrew. They surely didn't go to seminary. They didn't know anything. It's not anything like that. I don't even know if they were frumer than us. It's not necessarily either that way. But one thing is clearly different from what used to be to what is today. And that is that when they became parents, at whatever age they became parents, and probably younger than we did, they had already lived a lifetime. They had life's experiences. Because from age 10, the women, the girls, 10, 11, and 12, they already were up, sun up to sundown. They were either by the sewing machine, they were by the out in the fields, they were collecting the chicken, they were drawing water from the wells. They really needed to struggle to survive and make a life for themselves. And this life that they make for themselves, the struggle to live for themselves, is what made them into people. They needed to make decisions at age 12, 13, 14, and those decisions, well, it's either breakfast today or lunch today. It's not always was there breakfast or lunch. And you become very mature very quickly when you have these kinds of decisions that you have to make. All of a sudden, life is real, and you know, and it's serious, and you have to really worry about the ramifications of everything that you do and every decision that you make, and there's a consequence to every action. And when you grow up that way, and then when you have a child, that serious upbringing, you know, you all of a sudden you're a real person. You might be only 15, maybe they had children, or 16. But you already had a ganze Leben, a whole lifetime, driving you and giving you experience. Today, you know, it's no joke. Most girls, when they're walking down to the chuppah, so the greatest decision that they made until that day was which camp to go to, Shira or Beros. And they spent about that 2 months, maybe a seminary decision, right? The decision was, which is going to be the seminary that I'm going to have more fun in, right? This was the real decision that they were faced. Those are not real decisions, and they do not make personalities. They don't make people. You know, if you don't have life's experiences about what's really important, so then you don't know what's really important concerning your children either. You know, you never really dealt with serious issues. All of a sudden, you have this junge Weiblech, which attack the parents, but, oh, there's something serious all of a sudden that we have to deal with over here. They're coming with a lot of resources and a lot of knowledge, but very little life experience, because we live in America and a life of abundance and a life of plentifulness and a life that's, you know, as hard as it is, it's really easy if you compare it relatively to what it used to be. It's not a life that makes people. And therefore, we have to learn all of a sudden how to make decisions. Somebody mentioned me recently, Rabbi Sarotskin, who was just next to her a number of weeks ago from Cleveland. So she was in Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago, and she went to visit one of her grandchildren. So she was sitting there at night, and her granddaughter tells her, a married lady, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to have a parenting class. So could you mind staying home? I have to go to see the parenting class." So Rabbi Sarotskin says, "No, you know, if you do Rabbi Sarotskin, no, I want to come also. She never shied away from learning anything. That's her, you know, I also going to come to the parenting class." So she went to the parenting class, and she came back, and she was laughing. She couldn't stop her laughing for who knows how long about what she learned in the parenting class. So somebody else, suddenly asked her, "What are you laughing about? What's so funny?" So she says, "You know, I went to the parenting class, and the instructor says, do you know what, girls and ladies, whoever she was talking to? When you have children, you have to learn how to go to sleep in time. So the next morning, when your child cries, to get out of bed, you're not going to be all tired, and you're not going to be all sleepy, but you'll have a good night's sleep, and you'll be able to take care of your child." She says, "Does it have to go to parenting class for? You have to be told that you should go to sleep in time, so that you should have koiches the next morning to take care of your child?" So the granddaughter says, "Yeah, we have to be told. We have to be told, because who told us before about anything responsible? Where do we pick up responsibility? When we were in seminary, we went to an exactly what we wanted to do, or until we were chased into bed. But we were not chased into bed. So we don't. What are some, all of these responsibilities and these issues and these decisions? So, yeah, we have to go to prayer because we're not really learning much there. It's not, no, you're not going to learn any great new pieces of information. But this is the problem, that we need to go to prayer class to learn something which is so obvious and so simple, and all of a sudden, yeah, you know, I better reset my schedule. No more go to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning because I have a child to get up the next morning who has to be by the bus at 7:30. But how many mothers, I think it's a joke, how many mothers are not there with their children at 7:30 waiting for the child to go to the bus and not the child? Wake up yourself. So I go to davening a lot of times in shul and I see children, it's maybe 32 degrees in the morning, but they're in short sleeves. So, was the mother, if the mother was there and she sent them out like that, so she'd call them negligent mother. But I think that she wasn't there. She was sleeping, and the child dressed himself, and he's waiting by the bus in short sleeves or without a jacket. So we see that's what parenting classes are all about. Simple, achrayas responsibility, that if your child goes to school, it is the role of the mother to be there at the bus stop, no matter what weather, to send her child off. I think that our parents knew that instinctively. I think they didn't have to be told that. The mother, I don't know if she went by the bus because there wasn't a bus, she walked to San Jose. She made sure that the child would be at school, and the school, the child knew, my mother is taking me to school. There are many mothers out there, believe me, who are still sleeping when their children are going to school, and such a thing is not proper chinuch. It's for these types of subtle little things that unfortunately we need parenting classes for, so there's no great chiddush to say about it, but nevertheless, it's become something which is important. Another, I think, important nekuda of what has changed and why all of a sudden we need to have these instructions and wake up to these new ideas that we've been taught about parenting is, you know, there's a father, there's a mother, the Rabbanim Shalom gave them the ability to become parents, so nobody really goes to parenting classes to learn how to diaper the child or how to feed the child or how to, you know, those are things that come instinctively, you know, a mother, there's a maternal instinct, there's a father, this is taking care of the children, there's something that comes naturally, it's part of how the Rabbi Shalom created parents. Every animal who has children has the instincts of how to raise the child. That is not something that animals, I don't think, go to parenting classes. It's something that they learn instinctively as part of what becoming a parent is. It's a maternal or paternal thing that you have to do. So you would think that when it comes to the emotional development of the child, the spiritual development of the child, that animals don't do that because they have nothing to do with emotions and they have nothing to do with spirituality. So whatever is instinctive is created, that we have. But parents of children, and especially Jewish parents of children, have to take care of the child not just in a physical way. It's not just dressing him or diapering him, but it's also emotional and spiritual and teaching right from wrong and all kinds of things that go into human parenting. And that's not instincts. That is something that you have to learn. It's not the animalistic part of the person. It's the spiritual part of the person. So where do we pick that up from? Where do we get our guidance for spiritual, emotional raising of children? So unfortunately, we get it from the streets because we are a product of our environment. And whatever happens in the Goyish street, whether or not we're sheltered, is automatically affects the Jew. Automatically affects a person that's out there in the street. So the ideas which were simple to our parents, who were much more sheltered in the little shtetl, and they did not get involved with the Goyish ideas of what it means to raise children, they didn't need parenting classes to undo that. But we, who are unfortunately are much more exposed to the culture of the streets, we need parenting classes to undo that. I'll give you maybe an example. The Torah tells us, Ish imev aviv tiro, a person has to fear his father and his mother. But when it comes to honoring, it says, kameh v'savicha v'samecha. So everybody knows, Chazal tells us, Rashi says, why by fearing a parent does it first talk about a mother? When it comes to honoring a parent, it first mentions the father. So Rashi begins down from Chazal that naturally a son, a daughter, is more scared from the father because the father punishes, disciplines. So therefore, it's possible that he'll be scared from his father. It's simple. So the Tzar has to warn you, don't forget, fear your mother. But when it comes to honoring, which is the love that exists between parents and children, so instinctively a child will honor his mother, because the mother takes care of him and is wonderful to him and cuddles him, where the father is not so expressive. So therefore the Torah has to warn, Kabeda Savicha, the Torah pre-warns or stresses more, Kabeda Savicha. That's what Rashi says. I don't even know how to say this, but from my experience, and I generally deal with seminary girls, post-high school, I see it in high school girls as well. It's really unbelievable. The amount of girls who would say to me, I have no problem with my father. I have a great relationship with him. I love him. He loves me. And no problem. But I can't stand my mother. It's incredible how, from year, I'm in this business already 20 years, and how it's more and more, from more and more normal, functional, quote-unquote, regular homes. The tension, the breakdown of the relationship that exists between teenage daughters and their mothers, not their fathers, regularly, there's always exceptions, but generally, it's such a gaisha thing. It's so against what the Torah is telling us, that it's so simple and it's so obvious of Kabbalah Savicha Semecha, and the Torah have to tell you that. The main stress is Kabbalah Savicha, because he's the disciplinarian. But that there should be a problem with Kibbut Aim, that's, you know, from the Torah's vantage point, that shouldn't exist. But I can share with you that the Metzius is not like that. The facts are not like that. And it's an incredible thing. It's like, it's so hard to understand that, you know, the Gemara tells us, person is jealous. Jealousy is ingrained into the human psyche. But not from your own son. Not from your own child. Or from the Talmud. I don't know, but it's no longer true. At least from what I can see, there are so many parents, women generally, mothers, who have this ongoing tit-for-tat with their daughters, vying for attention and for within the household, and actually even jealous of the daughter's popularity or friends or lifestyle, and in a way that this, you know, my mother hates me, she despises me, she can't take this, she can't take that. Maybe the girl's, you know, maybe it's just the girl's perception, maybe it's not, maybe it's wrong, but who cares, this is all the perception. This is not a question of right or wrong, it's a question of what the girls think, and how they view their own mothers. When this happened in such a crushing way that it destroys the children, I mean, children who go there, the girls who feel that way, it's, you know, it's, they feel that their mothers criticize them for absolutely no reason, and they don't care about them, and they're jealous of them, and they don't have a relationship. Those are the children that we have problems with. And again, it's not Biyodeinu, but these are what we have to worry about, that there should not be a breakdown of tension between mothers and sons, and which is not so common, and mothers and daughters, which is a lot more common. And sons are the daughters at fault. So she's at fault. But who cares? But the relationship is destroyed. The mother didn't do whatever she can. She didn't go out of the way. She wasn't a vater enough. She didn't make sure not to destroy that relationship. And almost always, what is it? She wants me to do this. I don't want to do this. She wants me to go to this school. I don't want to go to that school. So you put your wishes, your desires, what you want the child to be, your expectations of the child are more important than the child itself. It's such a not normal situation where if the child is not the way I dreamed the child to be and not expecting, not performing at the level that I wanted, then I break up the relationship with the child. Right? What do you gain? If you break up the relationship with the child, not your child anyway, but it's not the child that I envisioned. It's not the expectations that I had. It's not, she didn't go to the school that I wanted. She didn't choose the path that I wanted. She married the wrong kind of a guy. All these kind of issues that what you wanted and not materializing the child feels, the child resents it, the child feels it, and the child hates the parents for it. Such words come out from their mouth in their anger and their frustration. It's a breakdown of the relationship which women have to understand from an early age. What's important to stress is not what's important for you, but what's important for the child. And just because you have certain expectations and certain wishes and certain desires, that doesn't mean that's the right thing for the child, and he will know it. And he will say, "Oh, my mother's not doing this for me. My mother's doing this for her." And sometimes, my mother's doing this for the neighbors. So many times you hear, she's embarrassed of her neighbors, therefore I have to do this. So what? That should be a chesed. That should be something that should factor in the chinuch of the child. What was she saying? What was she saying? What this person would say? That person would say. It's things which are so simple. But out there in the street, those are very important. In the Goyish street, it's what the street will say. It's what people will say, which is so important. So you bring that into the home. And in front of people, in front of what people will say, all of a sudden, you're very worried about people. But when people are not watching, the relationship with the child deteriorates. And it's a terrible thing that it has to be there. So we have to learn these things sometimes in parenting classes. It shouldn't be that way. We have to learn how to watch ourselves and our relationship with our children, not to destroy the child while saving the objective of what the child should be, would be, could be in my eyes. We should discuss one more issue. Do we have any more time? Or I just want to talk a little bit about disciplining, which is, of course, a huge part of parenting, and something which happens quite frequently, I'm sure, with little children. Disciplining, you really cannot raise a child without disciplining. I'm not going over here, not discussing tonight. Physical punishment, of course, everybody has to do what they feel is right, according to what their guidance is. The general guideline will be that physical punishment is good once in the lifetime of the child, only once. Because if you do it only once, and the child always knows that it's possible, that's good enough. The deterrent should be much worse than the actual punishment. It's almost impossible for the child to have the deterrent unless you do it once. So one time is there, and that memory and that deterrent should always be in the child's mind. But that's not a rule, and it depends on each child, and each mother, and each children, and that has to be discussed individually. I have no position in that. But generally, we know that Chazal says such a thing could exist. We know that present-day psychologists are not very fond of it. There has to be some kind of a disciplined process, whatever the form of punishment that a person chooses is available. But there has to be something like that. The old adage of spare the child, spare the rod, spoil the child, is definitely true to a certain degree. The actual application of it is dependent upon each person. It's not the time to talk about it tonight. But I want to talk about disciplining and punishment in general. This is very important, and it goes back to what we discussed in the breakdown of the relationship and parents of children. Because punishment is required. There's no question about it. The preface that we discussed before, David HaMelech had huge trouble with his children. Each one. And in the Pasuk itself, in the Navi itself, we find criticism of David of not disciplining his children enough. When it comes to Adoniyahu, who eventually, in the end of David's life, went to replace David instead of Shlomo, it says, his father never disciplined, never told him, don't do this, he never told him, never sat on his back and showed him what to do. So, that's an explanation on its own. But the greatest disappointment that David had in his life with a child was Avshalom. Avshalom was a remarkable child, and he was really destined to be the king after David. He had all the physical attributes of being a king. He had the mental attributes of being a king. But it wasn't to be. And Avshalom not only doesn't become the king, but he makes revolution against David HaMelech. And eventually David HaMelech's trusted advisor, Yoav, kills Avshalom in battle. Maybe against David's wishes, but that's the end result of Avshalom. He dies a terrible death. He got hung up with his long hair, and he dies with a sword. A whole nice is discussed in the Tanakh. He was going to kill his own father. He made a whole plan that he was going to kill his own father. And the question is, how does a child come to such sinner, to such a breakdown of a relationship? So he wanted to be Melech. So because of that, he would go kill David HaMelech, his own father. And what kind of a father? David HaMelech. How is it possible? Today, in the street, you read the newspaper, but we're maybe desensitized to it. But we shouldn't be. It should be shocking. A child should come to murder his own father. It should be something which shouldn't happen. And here it happens to David HaMelech. His own son, Avshalom, conspires and formulates a whole plan with a chesifel, with this, to go ahead and kill out David HaMelech. How's a child such a thing? How do we understand that? There's a number of issues. The point that I want to bring out is like this. David had another son, Amnon. Amnon was involved in scandalous behavior with his half-sister, who was also a half-sister to Avshalom, and Avshalom kills Amnon in revenge against David's wishes. David is very angry at Avshalom for what he did to Amnon. He killed him without permission, was not with Adam, was not according to the legal process. And Avshalom is forced to leave the house of David, run out of the country, and go to his maternal grandfather, who happened to be a goy, because his mother was a fastayer, and he lives there for 3 years. For 3 years, he's banished out of David's home. And David does nothing to rehabilitate him or to bring him back. Just sits there. It's a whole story, I don't want to be marach, how Yoav tricks David to allow Avshalom back into his good grace, or back to Yerushalayim, coming back from exile after 3 years. And even then, the Navi records, David says, okay, he wants to come back to Yerushalayim, let him go back to Yerushalayim. I don't want to see him. Pnei Melech lo yiro. I don't want to see his face. I'm not interested in having anything to do with him. Avshalom sits for longer. Still, David does not welcome him back. Until Avshalom loses his whole patience, and Yoav, who's responsible for bringing him home, he burns down his fields, and he says to Yoav, you brought me here, and you're not bringing me into the king to see, to be interviewed by the king? What kind of business is this? So finally, Yoav relents, and he tells David, you got to go see Avshalom. It's been years since he saw him. He did something wrong. He's been banished, he's been thrown out of the house, he's back here, he wants to come see you, he wants to reestablish the relationship with you. David relents. David says, okay, he wants to come see me, let him see me. He was so angry at him, but David says, okay, if he wants to come see me, let me see me. It says in the Pasuk that when he comes, after all of this politics, finally he gets in, the language of the Pasuk is, David HaMelech greets him, Vayishak HaMelech LaAvshalom. And it says that David kissed him. And if you take a look at it in the Ralbag, and so too in the Malbim, he says, Hine lo neshaka b'fiv. He says, he didn't kiss him in the mouth. Doesn't say, really, he gave him like this half-hearted welcome. After being in disgrace and in banishment for so many years, he finally comes home, and he gets this very cold return. The very next pasuk in the Navi, after this greeting of David, it says, Vayiach Rechem, immediately after that, Avshalom makes the decision, he's going to make a revolution against David. Chazal expressed themselves and they say, it's something called Chosech Shiftoi Soinei Binoi. Normally that's translated to me, like the English translation. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Chosech Shiftoi, if you spare the shave of the rod, Soinei Binoi, eventually the son is going to come to hate you, you're going to hate the son, you really hate your son. But what it really means, in a deeper sense, is it's not the question of disciplining and not disciplining. What David did wrong over here, when Chazal expressed himself and criticized him, David, is he didn't discipline him. Meaning, he disciplined him, and he disciplined him, but he was chaysachet. He saved it. The word chaysach in the Hebrew, if you want to put a bank account, kupat chisachon. You make a savings account. You chaysach something, you save it. What happens in the savings account? It intensifies, it collects interest, and becomes greater and greater and greater. The timer that Avshalom had against David is not that he didn't do something wrong. It's not that he felt that he didn't deserve punishment. But punish me already. Get it over with. Dispense the punishment. Do whatever you need to do. But then re-establish the relationship. Okay, I did my wrong. He didn't say I was right. In a fit of anger, he killed Amnon. So? That's a lifetime banishment. There's no tshuva. You can't come back. You have to hoard the punishment till it intensifies and intensifies and intensifies. And even when he brought him back home, he didn't do it fully, warmly, embracingly. Okay, fine. Go back to you. That kind of is that Avshalom couldn't deal with. It's not that he couldn't deal with the punishment. He couldn't deal with the rejection post the punishment. He says, why is it that you can't embrace me after I was punished? The ritzui, the pacification after the punishment, is as critical as the punishment itself. Of course, you have to discipline. But if you don't discipline, there are a lot of parents out there who will harbor resentment against their children for doing something wrong, and they'll hold on to it, not like David maybe held on to 3, 4, 5 years, but to a child. If you hold on to it for 3, 4, 5 hours, that's 3 or 4 or 5 years. Because when is it going to end? How long is mommy going to be angry at me? How long is this going to remain an issue between us? It's not like they're not willing to accept punishment or to admit wrong or to say that I did something which is not correct. But okay, I do it, but it depends on what age you're dealing with over here. But even in a much older age, so there is a punishment due. But there is a rehabilitation and an acceptance after the punishment is due. Right after Tisha B'Av must come Shabbos Nachamu. Only then can we do tshuva. Only then can we repent. But if after Tisha B'Av, if after the punishment, there is no Nachamu Ami, we're not going to get to Elul. We're not going to get to do tshuva either. Well, you punish me, but you don't really care about me. So you punish me, but you still resent me. You still reject me. You're continuing the punishment even after the dispensation. But if you're Menachem after the punishment, if you're immediately after the punishment, all of a sudden you become accepting and loving and saying, okay, it's over and it's forgotten, it's done. It's as if you never did it. It's tshuva me'ava. I accept everything that I did. This is what I needed to do. This is what you did. This is what I needed to do. But it's over. And you fixed a broken relationship. You reattached that which needed to be done, and it's great all over again. And so many, many parents who don't realize that what's done is done, and it's forgotten, and not to be brought up again and again. You remember what you did then? You remember what you did then? That is a rejection of the child. What do I have to hear about this again for? Why are you constantly bringing it up, something that happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? You're still harboring, you're still resenting it. It's still something that bothers you. That means you don't really care about me. It means that you're still angry. It's for your, to make yourself better. It's something that you keep. It's your problem. It's not my problem. When the chinuch becomes the parent's problem, that's not chinuch. You can't educate the child. You can't teach a child when the child sees or senses that it's for the parent. He's got to see and sense that it's totally, completely for himself. So if you chaysuch to shape it, if you hoard it, your son is going to end up hating you. Why don't you get rid of it? Why don't you deal with it? Deal with your problem. Don't use me as a way to fix the problem that you have, because apparently you're not concerned about me. You have to follow the einish. It must come with the nechama. Then the child can repent, and you can raise that healthy, correct child. The Rebbeinu Shlomo give some of the very simple ideas that we said, which we unfortunately shouldn't even have to get together and talk about, but as we said, there are things that need to be mentioned, even though they sound very simple. We should all take some of these ideas in mind, apply it to our own individual situation, the Rebbeinu Shlomo forgive, that this would be considered trying. This would be considered that the effort, again, the results are not in our hands, but trying is in our hands. When we go to these classes and this program should continue and should intensify, and it should have a tremendous impact on the community and on all the children. All of us should have much nachas from our children. Thank you.